Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Best of Body podcast. I'm Elle, and I have my co-host, Jules, here with me today. And today we're going to be answering three frequently asked questions, and we're excited. So right away, I'm going to give you what the three questions are so you can decide if you want to listen to all three or if one of them is going to answer your question. But we'd love if you would stick around for the whole thing. So the first question is, what are the best things to eat before I work out? We are going to cover that first. Then we're going to talk about what are the best foods to lose belly fat. And this question, if you have been a listener of ours for a while or you know our philosophy, you will be hearing an earful about this. And then the last question is, how do I start exercising and stop quitting? I'm excited to talk about that one as well. So, hey, Jules, how are you?
Hey, Elle, I am doing great. I know it's been a little bit that we have join together on a podcast, and diving in with three questions that we get quite a bit is, I feel, a great one for us to get into your ear as soon as possible. So I'm excited to get this one going.
So why don't we just dive into it? What are the best things to eat before a workout? This comes from somebody just trying to optimize their training or just trying to get into the gym, but struggling with what to eat before they work out. And sometimes these things are, we overthink them and we spend a little bit too much time worrying about the best possible thing. And instead of just choosing something and moving on with it, but I think you're going to have a couple good tips for people that may want to know.
Yeah, I think this is a question, again, that all three of these are ones we get frequently, but I think we get this more probably from almost everybody that we work with. And one of the things you'll notice when we are asked a question, it is really hard for us to give a straightforward answer without asking the person who's asking the question a few questions. So when somebody does address this concern, I have to turn around and ask them a few clarifying things. And so the first thing that I ask of them is, what kind of workout are they going to do? And I'll get into that in a little more detail. I'll also ask them, what time of the day are they going to work out? And also, what are they going to do after their workout, such as they're going to go shower and then head off to work, or it is after work and they're going to go home and carry on with their evening, or maybe they're having a lunchtime workout and they're going to go back to their office. So I think we have to address this question in a couple of different scenarios. And also, always, we have to find out what are the ultimate goals of the person who is exercising. So the first thing, I guess, I'm going to share with you about the time of the day, because this is often, people usually work out, you know, before their day begins or maybe after work. Those are the two most common times for people to get their exercise in. And what they eat may be vastly different. And whether it is cardio or lifting, the time of the day often makes a big difference. So if somebody's waking up and has not had anything to eat before they work out for hours, such as a fasted situation, and one of the big sort of, I don't want to call it trends or fads, but a common thing that people like to do is a fasted cardio workout. So when somebody says, I want to do a fasted cardio, I often will ask them, well, are you fasting because you feel better working out with nothing in your stomach, or is it that you have no time to eat? So for those two different scenarios, my answer will be very different. Did you have anything to add to that just on the time of the morning workout?
Well, so why don't you suggest, depending on each time, so suggest what you would say for somebody who works out early, someone who works out before work. So really just giving them some suggestions for those examples.
I'll address the early workouts. And if it is something that you really feel you cannot work out because eating something before you work out early in the morning gives you sort of that queasy, full feeling and you don't feel your best, then I do suggest having something small before you go in, and it might even be a half a slice of toast with some avocado or some nut butter, very, very small amount, just to give you a little bit of lasting energy to make it through your workout. And that might be something that you grab as you're walking out the door. So by the time you get to the gym, by the time you put on your training shoes and get warmed up, there might be a half an hour between when you ate and when you started exercising. For somebody who might be doing some weightlifting and is not going to be diving into an elevated heart rate super fast, having a little bit more of a balanced intake with a little bit of protein will help you feel a little more energized throughout your session. I know I'm going to give an example. I used to train a lot of clients first thing in the morning. My first client would show up at 5:30 in the morning, and I could tell who had something to eat and who didn't. And the number of times I've had to stop a workout with somebody who came into the gym who suddenly got pale. And I can always tell, it's sort of like the blood all rushes from their face and their lips, and they start to, you know, look a little starry-eyed, and they need to sit down and sort of regroup because they feel dizzy or about to faint. And the question I ask is, did you have anything to eat before you came in? And most of the time they'll say no. So thinking about how it might affect you if you are exercising on a completely empty tank and how it just may diminish the quality of your workout. So I suggest starting slowly if you're not used to eating something big before you work out, to just get used to a feeling of something in your stomach. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a large meal, but I recommend some type of a balance of some carbs, a little bit of fat, and a little bit of protein will really make a big difference. One of my favorite little tips for my clients who would train in the morning, I would say, make some French toast with some egg whites and some sprouted grain bread, and make it the day before or a couple of days before, and just put a couple of slices in a baggie for you to grab and go out the door. And that can really make a big difference. Just, you know, even a quarter of a piece of French toast to get you used to having something in your stomach. And most of the time, after you do that for a short period of time, you'll find that it will really greatly improve your ability to have a sustained and effective exercise session. So first thing in the morning, try to have something small and prepare it the night before so you can grab and go.
Yeah, a lot of people like an English muffin, half of an English muffin with some jam or some peanut butter. Something that is not, I would probably try to stray from something that's really fast digesting. Like, I wouldn't do necessarily like cereal before a workout. I probably, like, I definitely wouldn't do like candy or something, but you could do like something like a banana, half a banana even. If you're somebody that struggles with, I guess fruit is a little bit more on that fast digesting track, but if you are somebody that has trouble with eating first thing in the morning. But this isn't just a discussion about morning workouts. So that's something that you could possibly do. There are plenty of options. It's all going to depend on what you enjoy eating, and start small. This is a good challenge for those of you that have a hard time eating just a little bit. Like, it's okay to have a small snack. It doesn't have to be a full-on meal. You can save the meal for post-workout. So what about somebody who is working out after work? I have a ton of clients that work a full day. They're done between like 3 and 5 or 6 o'clock, and then they go to the gym, and then they don't eat dinner until after they get back from the gym. So what would you suggest as a pre-workout before the gym, if it's in between the lunch and dinner time, and maybe not necessarily even during like the snack time, they've already had their afternoon snack, but they need a little bit of something before they go to the gym.
Yeah. And you know, your example of the banana, bananas are great because they are for the most part portable and you can, you know, nip off a small section, maybe have a little bit of nut butter with the peanut butter. Again, the fat will slow down the absorption of the carbohydrates a little bit, but you don't want to go too heavy on it because that can sometimes make you feel a little bit full. But, you know, a quick and easy thing also is maybe some dried fruit and some dried nuts. That might be something you can just keep in your gym bag and nibble on a little bit of that on your way to the gym. When I used to train clients during the day and I would get a break and I would then work out later on in the afternoon, I would actually have a sandwich at lunchtime, but I would have half the sandwich at lunchtime and then have half the sandwich before I went to work out, because I find for me that worked out beautifully. You know, I didn't need a super large lunch, but I could sort of split it up and divide it out. And also, you might look at if it is something that is later in the day and maybe you don't get a lot of time to grab food through your workday. If you think about maybe an hour or an hour and a half before your workout at that time is, I think, a premium time to get a little bit more food in you. And maybe, you know, a lot of people who will use a stimulant type of thing, such as a coffee or a pre-workout with some caffeine in it later in the day to kind of give them a little extra energy, even like a small protein shake and a small piece of fruit on your way to the gym is also a quick and simple pre-workout thing. But you do want to have a little bit of carbs in that pre-workout meal to give you that energy if you find that, you know, it's been 3 hours since your last meal. Do you have any favorite pre-workout snacks or food combinations that you like?
Well, I tend to actually work out after breakfast. So I usually just eat my normal breakfast. I digest for about, you know, if I had to be out the door in 20 minutes after I ate breakfast, I probably would eat something different. But I tend to eat breakfast and then anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half, I get out the door. So for me, it doesn't really matter. But there are certain foods that I know that, like, I could never eat Chipotle and go to the gym. Like, I'm sure somebody listening understands what, like, that heaviness is. And so really, I don't have hard and fast rules on what foods I absolutely must or must not eat before the gym. But I do in the morning, I do either, if I've run out of vegetables, I just do egg whites, but I usually do a little egg white omelet or an egg white scramble. Sometimes I'll add in a whole egg, and I have an English muffin with peanut butter. And so that's been my go-to breakfast as of late. And that's a great pre-workout because it's enough calories for me. And then I'm ready to eat something like a protein shake and some fruit after my workout. And then I actually eat a meal not so long after I have that post-workout snack. So I don't necessarily, you know, we're just talking about pre-workouts here, but I don't necessarily make my post-workout a full meal. I make it a snack and then I actually have another meal shortly after. Yeah, so that's kind of my pre-workout. If I work out at a different time during the day, I'll do a couple rice cakes with peanut butter and jam, something like that. Other options, oatmeal's great if you have time to digest it, but everyone's going to be different. So, you know, that's the thing is that kind of what we're saying is anything that you like and anything that makes you feel good and doesn't make you feel really heavy is a good pre-workout meal. It's going to vary the number of calories that you eat for everybody. And so at the end of the day, don't overthink it and listen to yourself and figure out, okay, I noticed that I didn't eat enough today in general. My energy was lower and I couldn't lift as heavy or I couldn't go as hard in my spin class, whatever the case is. There's a lot of, you have to do that self-reflection and get in tune with your body and start to notice, okay, when I only ate the banana, I didn't have as much energy as if I ate the banana and some eggs or anything like that.
Yeah, just one other thing when you're kind of going through your pantry and looking or your refrigerator and looking, one thing you might want to avoid is a very high fiber food. such as like a bowl of All Bran cereal, because the fiber, one of the benefits of fiber is it actually does slow the digestion down a little bit, which can be really, really helpful if you are needing to stay full longer. But if you're eating and running out the door, that may actually be a little uncomfortable for you, especially if you're drinking some water during your workout, which is always recommended that you at least sip on some water throughout your workout. It might give you that fuller feeling in your stomach, which might feel a little uncomfortable. But it really is, pre-workout is a bit of trial and error. And what you eat before a cardio-only session, if you have a HIIT session or you're taking, you know, a type of circuit exercise class that might be very, very high intensity, you might find that the volume of what you're eating you want to keep down versus a lifting session that you might have more rest times in between, and you won't be impacted by that. But, you know, I would recommend, you know, kind of listing out for yourself some different options and then just trying them and see what you find helps you feel your best for your particular workouts. You also mentioned something about what your usual schedule is. You'll go work out, you know, after you've had already a breakfast, and then post-workout there'll be a meal. If you are also the kind of person that might be working out, then immediately going to work and not eating anything for a couple of hours after, you might really want to work on having a little bit more before your workout.
So I think we covered that. And that's the thing, is that I do wish we could give you 20 foods that are the absolute best for pre-workout. And there are a lot of great options, but a lot of it is trial and error. And that's one thing that I love about health and fitness, is that, yeah, there are guidelines and there are things that can help you come up with ideas that are going to inspire you to make decisions, but nothing is going to be the hard and fast rule. And that leads us into our next question, which is, what are the best foods to lose belly fat? Jules, do you want to get started on that?
Yeah, I always chuckle because, again, that is one of the big areas that people, when they come into the gym, they think that they can target a specific area of their body and say, I really only want to lose weight in my hips or my belly or my thighs or, you know, under my arms or, you know, in my back, you know. So unfortunately, there's not one way that we can target, but we do know that there are sort of perfect storms that can lead up to the increased incidence of a person putting on fat deposits in areas of their body. And we don't know until we start to make modifications in food choices and exercise regimes, I'm going to call it exercise regimes, that can have an effect in general on areas of their body fat. So, you know, I'm hesitant to say best foods, but, and this is where a lot of people say, oh, you know, skip carbs, because if you skip carbs, then, you know, you're going to lose that belly fat. And it really does come down to calories in and calories out. So if you've listened to many of our other podcasts, we talk about sort of that equation of making sure that your intake and expenditure are in balance with what your goals are. So if your goal is to lose body fat, and if you personally carry it mostly in your belly, then you probably want to make sure that your balance of intake and outtake. But I'm going to give you just my honest opinion as a coach with my, take a humble moment and say my vast experience, because being in health and fitness for 40 years, I always have to count that extra, what year am I up to? 40 years. I can tell you, when I am looking at somebody's history of what their food choices or their extraneous calorie choices, I often see a scenario of common things, and it often is a combination of extremely high processed foods, higher than a balance of simple sugars and saturated fats and alcohol. And that's only from the food aspect. I'm not even talking about other lifestyle aspects such as stress management, sleep hygiene, hydration focus. So all of those things, if body fat accumulation in a particular area of your body, especially if it is the belly, you probably do want to look at all of those aspects as well. If you Google, how do I lose belly fat, you're probably going to come up with a lot of articles on cortisol. And this is not a discussion about going into cortisol and hormonal influences. There's definitely effects there. But talking about the best foods to lose belly fat, and I had somebody asking me that general question, not knowing anything else about them, I would ask them, you know, how much of your intake comes from highly processed foods, fast foods, foods with ingredient lists that go on for days, and 90% of them you cannot pronounce. So that's one. Sugar content. Now, we were just talking about having some good natural sugars, such as in fruits and breads and cereals, that are really beneficial because they give you energy. They carry lots of great nutrients with them. And, you know, how are those in terms of percentage of your total intake? And maybe thinking about what ways can you reduce the total sugar in your intake? And again, alcohol. You know, we have, I think, at least one podcast on alcohol, but alcohol really throws the metabolic systems into a little bit of a snafu, just sort of like, what are we going to do with this alcohol, with this extra calories, and how does your body metabolize it? So looking at your overall intake and reducing those main factors will be your best grouping. There's not one best food to belly fat loss.
You described that perfectly. And it really comes down to kind of changing the question a little bit to what foods should you be avoiding to reduce the amount of belly fat that you could possibly gain. And so it's really avoiding those foods in excess. Like, it's not to say that you can't have a donut every once in a while. It's not to say you can't stop at Wendy's because you need to feed the kids and yourself on a road trip. That's not really what it's about. It's really about what you're doing all the time. It's not what you do sometimes. And I'm sure people have heard this before, but it's like the one salad won't make you lose weight just as the same as one fast food meal isn't going to make you gain weight. But if you're doing it every day, then, you know, accumulation of all these things is really going to be what has the impact. And so it's the same thing if, you know, somebody says, oh, but if I take a rest day, I'm going to lose all of my progress. And it's like, no, it's not. That actually isn't true. If you take a rest day, you're probably going to be better off. But if you never exercise again, if you take multiple rest days, then you're going to have a problem. I think that was very well said. And it's tough because we want quick answers. Most people want that instant, that magic pill, and it's just not the reality. And as time goes on, there are quick fixes that seem to pop up all the time, and then a new one comes along. By now, if you've been seeing these quick fixes for years and years and years, and there's something new every day, it's clear that no quick fix works, right? There's none of these quick fixes work. The quickest fix is to fuel your body properly and to avoid the things that have the labels that start with this type of oil or high fructose corn syrup, all of these things. And the hard part is that in the United States, especially, sugar is called all sorts of things. And so there are a lot of hidden names in ingredient lists that you may think, oh, well, that doesn't say sugar, or that doesn't say a type of fat or oil, but it's disguised as something else. And unfortunately, companies take advantage of the fact that people don't know what these ingredients are, and they'll say, oh, well, it's seven ingredients, it must be fine. But all of these ingredients have been genetically modified or they've just been created in a lab. So it gets tricky.
It does. And it is also, you made a good point, you know, the food companies that are producing the processed foods, they each are thinking to themselves, well, there's nothing wrong with, I'm not going to name any potato chips, okay? There's nothing wrong with potato chips. And this is what, you know, we address too with our approach with nutrition, that all foods, you know, no foods are excluded, but all foods have limitations. So to say, are potato chips bad? I'm not going to say potato chips are bad, but if you eat a large amount of potato chips on a regular basis, then, you know, and that puts you over your caloric need, then the potato chips may not be good for you. So it is not one particular food that is good or bad. It's how does this food or even alcohol, how does this item that you're consuming fit into the bigger picture? Same idea. You know, if you miss a workout, it's not the end of the world because it's what you do on a regular basis. So when somebody asks about what are the best foods to lose body fat or belly fat, I also have to find out, well, what else are you doing to help you lose belly fat? Because as I said at the beginning, you know, are you making sure you get enough sleep? Are you managing your stress? Are you taking care of all those other aspects of your health and fitness and balance?
Yeah, you'll find articles out there that will be like 8 tips for losing belly fat. And it's really, I think it's marketed that way because that's a question that people ask a lot. And that's why we're answering it in this way, because that is what people want to know. I want to lose the belly fat. And as we touched on before, you can't really spot reduce. So if you want to lose the belly fat, you're going to, and that stores fat predominantly in their belly. You may not have fat that you want to get rid of, you know, in other places. But, you know, this is something that a lot of women, when they do start weight training or they do start changing their body composition and they may start to lose body fat, unfortunately, they start losing it in their cup size. And if only we could spot reduce, we would say, please don't take any fat from there and take it all from here. But it's just not how it works. And so there is a balance of figuring out, okay, how much body fat do I want to lose? And this isn't necessarily answering this question, but it's another factor to consider when talking about this question. Are you weight training? Are you doing something to change your body composition so that you can build muscle in places so we're not just losing body fat all over? And I think that's a common misconception is that, well, if it's, I just have to diet more, I just have to lose weight in order to lose the belly fat. Well, weight training actually can redistribute where you carry that body fat. You still will carry fat in your belly if you are somebody that does carry fat in that area. Some people just naturally don't. You'll see somebody that has body fat in other places, but they have an 8-pack, you know? So everybody is going to be different. But weight training can help kind of shift things around in your body and is actually really great at reducing fat around the core, around the stomach. So that's why, you know, we're not necessarily talking about weight training today, but you should do it.
That brings up a great point because when somebody will ask a question about, you know, I want to lose belly fat, what's the best food to eat? I will often ask them, what are they willing to do to lose the belly fat? And if they say, well, I only want to eat the foods that are going to help me, then clearly that person is not bothered by the belly fat enough for them to look at what they might be doing that might need additional change. So all of these things that will fall into the perfect storm to give you the body that you want.
Yeah. And it's really tough because I have worked with clients that have stayed with me for months and months and months, and they may not have made progress. And unfortunately, it tends to be the result of them not being able to, you know, and it's kind of hard because I don't want to put the blame on clients for not achieving their goals, but it takes effort and it takes a lot of work. And when we do provide the tools and there aren't the quick fixes and they are the basics of, listen, this is how it's going to be done. It needs to be done over a period of time. And then if you want it to stick, these behaviors that you've picked up on and these habits that you've accumulated over time, they have to stick in order for it to stay off. And that's kind of goes back to what we were talking about before about instant gratification and wanting things quickly and wanting it to be easy. it's not easy, especially if you have a good amount of body weight to lose or body fat to lose. It's not easy. It's going to take time and it's going to take dedication when you may not feel like doing it.
And instead of the best food to lose body fat, it should be what's the best skill or behavior, and that would be patience. You know, coming up with a plan that you can work with, some things that you're willing to do or willing to sacrifice. So, you know, for example, alcohol, that's a big thing that I have people who they're just really happy to change their exercise habits, change their general eating habits, but they still want to have an alcohol intake that is going to make a difference in terms of the difference that they're going to see. So you have to, you as the listener who might be thinking about, you know, yourself and your own personal goals and things you want to achieve, you always have to ask yourself, what am I willing to do to get the results that I want? But not only what are you willing to do, what are you willing to do and sustain? Because the sustaining part is the, you know, not be perfect, but to sustain over a period of time to get the results that you want.
Because if you can sustain it for most of the time, you can go on vacation and you can spend a week eating at the all-inclusive. Like, yeah, I wouldn't suggest binge eating until you can't possibly fit anything else in your stomach for a week, but you can have these foods in moderation. And so it's being able to stop and know that you will be able to eat again. I think when people start or just in different phases, especially if you are dieting, it's hard. And using dieting as in putting yourself into a calorie deficit in order to lose belly fat or body fat, because that's really how it's going to, you know, at the end of the day, it's the best foods. We talked about the food choices, what not to eat, what to focus on. But at the end of the day, there does have to be some calorie deficit somewhere. And the best way to do it is through nutrition. Trying to create a calorie deficit just through exercise is very difficult. It's so much easier to eat calories than it is to burn them. Even if you say, well, I burned 800 calories during this workout. First of all, your calorie trackers are probably not accurate. We don't really know how accurate those calorie burn trackers are. But, you know, it takes that effort and you do have to be in that calorie deficit. And if you are somebody who struggles and you say, well, I have dieted, I have tracked my calories, and I just didn't lose the way, I didn't lose body fat, it's either you're not tracking correctly, you're not tracking very accurately, or you overestimated what your intake should be. So what your maintenance calories should be, you know, so we do these calculations to try to understand, okay, this is how many calories your body is burning. This is how many calories that you should be eating to achieve the calorie deficit. But sometimes it takes time to figure out what's actually correct. And so you may be overestimating how many calories you need to lose body fat or lose weight. And you could also just be tracking incorrectly. And so it's very unlikely that if you got the numbers correct, that you wouldn't see the result that you're looking for. So you have to look and not really blame external factors. You have to kind of see, okay, well, what's the issue here and how do I fix it? And then you have to commit to the amount of time that it would take to actually see the changes if you do have to adjust them.
So being in a deficit for 1 week and then the next week being in a surplus, and if your surplus in your off week over, you know, supersedes the deficit that you accumulated from the previous week, you're going to be standing in place or being backtracking when you think that, you know, I've had a great week. I did everything very focused, blah, blah, blah. The next week I didn't work out. I ate whatever I felt like. I ate more than I should have. That often happens, you know, and this is a completely off the topic. So, but it is not an uncommon thing for people to stick with a focus of things that they are focused on positive, and then over the weekend, just kind of let it all go. 2 days can backtrack, you know, quite a bit. So,
yeah, a little bit of a tangent, but it's hard to answer a question like that when there's so much nuance to it. There's so much more to it than it's the same thing about, well, okay, we'll answer what the best pre-workout food is, but we got to know a lot of things before we can give you a suggestion. And so that's why being a coach is so fun, because we work individually with people, and every single person has a different scenario. And so we have to say, okay, well, that's why cookie cutter things don't work. That's why, you know, what somebody eats isn't going to be the best thing for you to eat. So, you know, but we could go on and on and on and on about that. Do you have anything else to say about that?
I probably have a lot more, but they probably will lead to some other tangents. So I'm going to stay with the question specifically. One last little note on this. If you notice, the first two questions were asked, what are the best things for us to eat to have something happen? That is often how people will ask questions, or they want to hear these little tips. And I always struggle with being able to say the, you know, the top three things you should do, when sometimes it is the top three things you shouldn't do. And it's hard as a coach to be that disciplinarian, but that's our jobs. And to be able to be honest with you and say, you know, you may want to have this, but what we really need to do is look at realistically, what are you willing to do to push yourself? And it might be a sacrifice.
But I think that that's the best way to answer it. And I'm almost glad that these questions were asked this way, because this is how people often ask these questions. And it shows that there is a little bit of a disconnect between what we think needs to be done in order to make something happen. And if we can preach all day about all of the things that you should consider when you're looking to achieve this type of goal, then ask the questions however you want, and we will interpret them and give you, you know, a long-winded answer, but you'll walk away with some information. And I'd rather that than somebody walk away and be like, oh, the best things to eat are a banana, oatmeal, or an English muffin. That's the best thing. And then they never stray from that. And then they end up never having variety in their diet because they're so set on what the best thing to do is.
And if you told me to eat a banana, I'd be like, no way am I doing this, because I'm not a banana fan. So, you know, it's realizing what is each individual person willing to do or not do.
Well, and if you don't like bananas, but you don't mind bananas in things, you could always make like a protein pancake. You know, that's a good pre-workout, right?
It is, but I don't like bananas.
Not for you?
No.
No bananas in anything?
I'm not a banana fan. I just don't like the, I have weird childhood negative associations with bananas. So.
That's reasonable. I'm going to make you something with a banana in it and see how you like it. Just kidding. My brother and I were kids. We used to make my mom eat ketchup every birthday.
My birthday of all times, because I don't like ketchup. I'm weird. I have weird things I don't like.
That's not that weird. There's plenty of people that don't like ketchup. I don't like mayonnaise. You don't like mayonnaise either. But anyway, unrelated. Let's answer the last question. And the last question is an exercise related question. And it is, how do I start exercising and stop quitting and or not quit? How do I get into an exercise routine and stop showing up for myself? Because that's something that people run into all too often. They get so excited. They've got a new program or a new plan, or they've joined a studio that does classes, and they go for a couple weeks and then something happens and they stop going, or they go once and then they never go again. So this is a little bit more related to habits and behaviors. But right away, if I came to you and I said, I'm unhappy with the way that I feel, I want, or the way that I look, maybe both, and I want to exercise, but I can't seem to make it stick. What do I do?
So again, I would have to ask you some questions so I could make sure that I am identifying what are the struggles that you're having. So the first thing I would want to ask is, what do you want to achieve by starting exercise? So then the person might say, you know, I want to build some muscle, or I want to lose belly fat, or I want to lose weight, or, you know, I want to get in shape for, you know, a vacation, or I had a baby and I want to get back in shape. You know, I want my pre-pregnancy body back. So I get an idea of, okay, what is this person going to need to do to get to their goals? And so that helps me identify some specific things. Then I ask them, what kinds of things do they like to do? So if somebody says, well, I would love to lift weights, but I don't know what to do. So then I might have to give them a little more guidance on how to begin from just that perspective. Or they might say, you know, I really need to have a social group, so I might recommend something else. So identifying what they're going to do for their exercise will give them an idea of what excites them. So it has to be something that excites them. And sometimes people will come, you know, and they'll say, I want to get in the best shape, but, you know, I love exercise classes. And then, and this happens a lot, then they start talking through the things they want. And then we come to the realization what they need to do is actually lift weights. So sometimes it's a process to figure out what it is that you're going to do and, you know, what do you have accessible to you. And then I also want to find out what kinds of things will help support them with consistency. So, for example, if it is a mom has a newborn baby and they want to start working out and they plan to work out at home, I might say, okay, well, so tell me, when are you going to make sure that you have your workout time uninterrupted? So do you have a support system in your home? You know, do you have somebody that can attend to the baby crying if you're in the middle of working out, because that will improve your success? Do you have childcare at the gym? So things like that, to find out what is the scenario that's going to help them with the success. So all the time that I'm thinking about this, well, how am I going to help them get started? But how am I going to help them be consistent? So, for example, somebody says, well, I don't have any time with childcare and blah, 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 but I have a gym at my office and I can take my lunch hour to work out. Okay, so you see how it becomes a process of developing the plan. So once you get that broader picture of what do they like to do, where are they going to go to do this, and what things get in their way from being consistent, then the starting point becomes less difficult. Then we can say, okay, you know, you can go, you know, to the gym 3 days a week and you don't have to worry about the kids or the things that would get in your way. Let's start small. Let's start with just picking a frequency that you think you can achieve. And so somebody might say, well, I have in my schedule, or I am willing and dedicated enough to work out 6 days a week. Then I might say, well, let's divide that in half and let's go for three times this week and hit the three times and then see how you feel after that first week. Because if you haven't been exercising and you think you're going to go every day, probably by the second or third day, you're going to be too sore to go that fourth and fifth day. So we want to build in the things that are going to help you with the success. And instead of thinking, oh, I have an hour and a half, I'm going to go and I'm going to do an hour and a half of hardcore exercise, I might say, well, let's make sure that you have an appropriate warm-up, that you have a focus for your particular days, and you have a plan for doing some stretching built in, because you're going to need the recovery. So how do you start? I think, you know, I'm going to summarize it. I know Elle has some things to add. Thinking about what your goals are, thinking about where and when you're going to go, thinking about the support systems around you so that you can make sure you hit those, and then plan for half the frequency that you ultimately may really need to go. Elle, do you have anything to add there?
Yeah, so I think that that's great, because that really dives into how to get started. And I didn't even think about that to answer the question, to talk about how to get started, but I'm glad that you covered that, because I just assumed, oh, this person's, you know, starting, but they're stopping all the time. And that is true. A lot of people do even just have a hard time getting started. And that's a big barrier to entry, essentially, is that you don't really even know what to do, and you don't even know when you should go, and you don't have the plan. And if you don't have a plan, how are you going to organize when you're going to go if there's no plan? So that is really important. And, you know, I really like what you said about figuring out, okay, it's because we set goals when we're very motivated. So we are excited about getting back into the gym. And because of that excitement, we do feel that motivation. And so we say, well, we're going to go 5 or 6 days a week. But when reality sets in and the busyness, and if you're a parent and you have sick kids, or if you're a student or you work full time and go to school or just anybody that experiences life things, there's a likelihood that things are going to change. And there is going to be one day in maybe your first or second week that your plans have to change, or maybe you are too sore. So it's really trying to figure out how to not let those times that you're thrown out of your routine lead you to stopping completely. And it's kind of like what we talked about with the nutrition, is what can you do consistently? And one or two times that you do something out of the norm isn't going to cause a problem. But if it becomes what you consistently do or don't do, the consistency is always going to be that most important piece of it. And so quitting or stopping the momentum that you have going, what do you think most people, like, what do you think causes that for most people? Like, why do you think people are quitting or stopping? Just like an example.
I think that's a great question to ask, because I think one of the biggest things is that they haven't, and it's not that they haven't set their priorities, because usually people's priorities are very focused on it, but they don't have a backup plan, and they don't also allow themselves to restart at any point in time. So one of the things that's really, really happens very frequently when people first, you know, they get back into it and they're starting to get their groove on, somewhere I can almost always count on it when somebody is going back to working out, somewhere within their first 3 to 6 weeks, they get a cold or they get sick, because exercise is a stress on your body. Sometimes your immunity is put at risk, and maybe now you're in the gym and you're around people you haven't been around before. And so then they get thrown and they get frustrated by it, because their expectations are not, or their plan isn't flexible enough to allow them the opportunity to get back into it just as they did at the beginning. So not letting those things get in their way. Sometimes the stopping and starting, or the starting and stopping, and then the difficulty restarting, is because the initial plan may have been unrealistic. So again, maybe think about, your plan was to get into the gym 3 times a week and build up to 6. Then you're up to 6, and that's when you get sick. And it feels frustrating to have to go back, but maybe 3 or 4 workouts in a week is really more realistic for you. And that, don't be, again, so impatient to get it all done at once. It might take you a little longer. Maybe it will take you 8 months to get to your fitness goals versus 6 months, because you're going 4 times a week instead of 6 times a week. But you'll feel like you can actually master that. And so you have to look at, what can you actually master?
Right. And if you're somebody who was dead set on 6 months and making progress, and you have something that happens and you have to go down to 3 days a week or 4 days a week, and it's going to take you 8 months, isn't that better than it never happening? Like, isn't that better than just saying, you know what, I wasn't going to make it in 6 months, it was going to take me 8 months, well, I might as well stop trying? That's ridiculous. But it is, as ridiculous as it is, it's very, very common. And I heard something the other day, and I thought this was interesting. And somebody was talking about how this little concept helped them stay on track with their exercise. And they said, I can skip one day, but I can never skip two. And so, yeah, you can take a day off, but don't let it get to be two. And, you know, the thing that I have to say in response to that is, sometimes it is going to be two. But if you go by the kind of, if you keep with that idea of, okay, yeah, I can take a day off because I'm busy or I'm tired or I'm unmotivated or I'm sore or whatever the case is, that's fine. You can take that day off. But it's easy to let that spiral into 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days. And then you think, oh, well, I don't even know where to start because I didn't do my plan that I had for the rest of the week. So I thought that was interesting. And anytime that there's like a rule like that, you have to understand that sometimes rules need to be broken, but just because they're broken once doesn't mean that they're broken for good. You can repair them.
Yeah, I want to share a story of a client that I have been working with for quite a while. She's a physician, and so she works in a hospital, so she has worked crazy hours. And the place that she came to work with me, she worked on for, I think, 5 days, full long days, and then she had a week off. So we came up with a plan that she literally, you know, had goals to achieve that were really kind of the minimal that she needed to do on her full work weeks. And then she had a goal week of her off week that was a little more aggressive. And she did that for months, and her results were amazing. So sometimes you have to be really, really creative when you have somebody who has things. Now, she could not change her work schedule. That was her work schedule. So it wasn't like, oh, I can squeeze a workout in, you know, at lunchtime. No, when she was on, she was on. She couldn't do that. And there were days she would come home and she was tired and she maybe could go for a walk, but or maybe get a quick lift in, but she couldn't do a full aggressive, you know, 4 or 5 day workout that week. So her next week, so we did it in 2 week cycles, and we plan things in 2 week cycles. And so sometimes your life may dictate what your routine is going to be. But if you look at things in the bigger picture, then instead of getting frustrated by the one or two workouts that you miss, you will remember the real goal of this, to start exercising and be consistent and not quit. Doesn't mean that you might have gaps in there, and you kind of just have to go with the flow of that, and it calls for creativity. Also, one thing that I have noticed a lot of times, people get stuck when they have big life changes or big schedule changes. And this happens, we notice this a lot in, you know, working with people, that there's cyclical things in the calendar. So if you have a life, whether you're a teacher, you have people in your family that work in education or students, that you live by a school calendar. And so sometimes you have to go with the flow on that. So I just wanted to mention that sometimes you have to cut yourself some, I don't want to say slack, but some grace with looking at what is really realistic for you to get to really ultimately be successful with your activity and exercise goals.
And we just have time for just one last thing. And I think that I'll just say that sometimes you have to be tough on yourself, and you have to say, we try to find all of these tricks of, like, you know, don't push yourself. But at the end of the day, like, you sometimes do have to push yourself, and sometimes you have to do things that you don't want to do. And so if you are someone that does continuously keep quitting or stopping, sometimes you do have to look internally and say, well, why am I not showing up? Is it because I get unmotivated? I'm not as motivated as I was when I set that initial goal. And so that's why it's so important to set realistic goals, because then you'll just be disappointed every single time you set a goal, and then the motivation runs out and the excitement for the goal runs out, and then you never finish out the goal. You have to look and you have to face the facts sometimes. And that's why a lot of people don't love to go to therapy, you know, because you don't really want to face the reality of maybe the behaviors that you have, or the habits that you have, or the tendencies that you gravitate towards. So it's all to say that you are in control of a lot of these things. Like, there are things that happen that are outside of your control, but the way that you respond to them is going to be entirely up to you. Now, everybody has different tools and everybody has different experiences, and there's traumas involved. We're very complex beings. And so for someone to say, you just got to do it, you just have to do this, that's how it's going to get done, it's not always the answer. But sometimes you do have to reflect and say, what could I do differently?
Absolutely. And sometimes what you need to do, there may be another way to do it. And I'm not talking about a shortcut, but again, so say you've been going to boot camp classes, and this happens a lot of times. People will come to us and say, I've been working out really hard and I'm not getting the results that I want. So then we have to look at what do we need to change so that you start to get the results.
Absolutely. So hopefully you all enjoyed these questions and the answers. And if you have any questions that you want answered, just let us know. You can reach out to us on social media at Team Best Fit Body on Instagram, or check out our website, shoot us an email, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Bye, everyone.